I'm a corn farmer. What's good for the ethanol business reflects back on my business.
There are some folks who are going to be okay, and others who are going to have to make some decisions about what's best for them and what's best for the bank.
Trade agreements done right, strictly enforced, level that playing field.
But we think we've done not a very good job of negotiating these agreements.
I would say right now we're looking at an average crop.
I think it's going to be a record soybean yield.
We're very blessed. It really helps with these lower commodity prices to have those extra bushels to help pay the bills.
It's time to embrace mandatory GM labeling, but done right. We think GMOs are safe.
You know, we need the technology, but Monsanto should be held accountable for some of this.
I'm Mark Dorenkamp.
I'm Larry Lee.
I'm John Perkins.
I'm Megan Grebner.
I'm Julie Harker.
I'm Ken Anderson.
I'm Nicole Heslop.
I'm Jerry Passer.
I'm Shannon Yokley.
I'm Andrew Flynn.
And I'm Cindy Young. Brownfield, Ag News for America.
2016 will be known as the year of one of the most contentious presidential elections ever. Questions remain about what the Donald Trump election will mean for agriculture. It was a year of declining fortunes for the farm economy. It was dominated by looming farm issues such as GMO labeling and the Veterinary Feed Directive. 2016 has been the year of agribusiness mergers, big ones valued well into the billions and billions of dollars. Farmers were dependably productive. Depending on the location, the harvest was, at its worst, average, and at its best, record-setting. Welcome to the Year in Review 2016 from Brownfield, Ag News for America. I'm Tom Stever, and we begin with what lies ahead. Changes are coming to the U.S. government's executive branch. The presidential election cycle was between two major candidates who agreed on almost nothing. However, each took a consistently dim view of multilateral trade agreements that have been backed by most corners of agriculture. The pending Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement was often maligned in campaign rhetoric by both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Now, President-elect Trump has said that when he's inaugurated, he'll pull the United States out of that agreement. Brownfield's Megan Grebner reports it leaves that trade deal and others in question.
The National Farmers Union is one of the few farm groups that is against trade agreements. NFU President Roger Johnson says Donald Trump expressed throughout his campaign his affinity not to trade, but to the agreements.
And I would say the same thing is true for our organization. Our members strongly support trade, but we think we've done not a very good job of negotiating these agreements. Had we done a better job, we wouldn't be sitting with a half a trillion dollar plus annual deficit.
Bob Young, chief economist of the American Farm Bureau Federation, says they are mostly optimistic about the future of trade under the next administration.
We find the trade agreements to be fairly positive. Even in that conversation that we had with President-elect Trump, he did come back and say that he's very much in favor of trade.
The chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee says he would like to see President-elect Trump renegotiate the TPP rather than withdraw from it. Texas Congressman Kevin Brady says he hopes to work with the new administration on strong, enforceable trade deals.
These trade agreements, done right, strictly enforced, level that playing field.
Japan's government has approved it, and the Japanese prime minister says he hopes the action of his government persuades President-elect Donald Trump to reconsider the trade deal. I'm Megan Grebner.
January 1st signals changes for livestock producers, what their food-producing animals are fed, and the relationship that they have with their veterinarian. The Veterinary Feed Directive has been under discussion for a while. As Brownfield's Julie Harker reports, livestock producers have been talking and listening for a long time.
At the start of 2016, the livestock industry was talking about preparing for new antibiotic restrictions that were a year away. In January, Brownfield's Ken Anderson filed this report from the Cattle Industry Convention in San Diego.
Changes to the veterinary feed directive, which will take effect in 2017, will require veterinarians to sign off on drug use in feed. Kansas State University veterinarian Dr. Brian Lubers says it will probably require improved communications between producers, their veterinarians, and their feed distributor.
It's about having a relationship with a veterinarian, having a relationship with a feed distributor, which they probably already do if they're using feed-grade antibiotics.
The new rules will also eliminate the use of those drugs for growth promotion, but Lubers says the impact of that will be pretty minimal economically in the beef industry.
At the National Pork Forum in Indianapolis, Dr. Tom Berggren with the American Association of Swine Veterinarians gave producers three takeaways on the new rules.
This is a huge deal for the industry on antibiotics. Number two, we can handle it. We can manage it. We can work in this regulatory environment, come out the other side better for it. And number three is if we don't do number two, we're not going to like what comes out the other side.
He says producers needed to build a firewall between the industry and future regulations, taking away more antibiotics. In the spring, the National Pork Producers Council said the Food and Drug Administration did not cover all its bases before issuing the Veterinary Feed Directive final rule. More from Mark Dorenkamp at the World Pork Expo in Des Moines.
NPPC Chief Veterinarian Dr. Liz Wagstrom says pork producers have been preparing for changes brought on by the Veterinary Feed Directive, and clarification was needed for those who mix their own feed.
Originally, we thought they were going to have to register with FDA as a distributor. FDA has now clarified that if they're mixing on farm, feeding only animals they own on farms they own, they don't need to register.
But Wagstrom says for producers with contract growers who send feed to other farms, even for animals they own, registration is required.
In May, a Missouri congressman who's from a family of cattle ranchers said the FDA's veterinary feed directive was ridiculous and an unnecessary burden. Congressman Jason Smith introduced a bill to repeal the directive in the U.S. House.
Some is predicted to cause 130,000 hours of added burden on farmers, veterinarian, feed store dealers. It's just unacceptable.
Young people who show livestock, not just producers, will also have to comply with the VFD. I'm Julie Harker on Brownfield.
On the 2016 Brownfield Ag News Year in Review, there's a geographical and seasonal demand for help to do everything from planting to harvesting to milking. Much of that demand is filled by people who emigrate from countries close to the United States. When the flow of labor is disrupted, it's felt by farmers who need that help. Brownfield's Nicole Heslop reports.
The American Farm Bureau Federation said this year farmers applied for a record number of guest worker visas. But backlogs in the application process could cause crops in more than 20 states to go unharvested.
Right now in Georgia, you've got blueberries coming in, you've got squash coming in, you've got cucumbers coming in, and we don't have the labor to pick it.
Georgia vegetable farmer Bill Brim told reporters in April he's been fighting a labor battle since 1997 when he first began using the H-2A program. He said when there's not enough workers, they have to decide which crops will go unharvested. Carlos Castaneda, a farm labor contractor in Southern California, said contracted workers were delayed about 5 weeks this past spring. He said some farmers ran out of options and canceled their H-2A applications or chose not to plant certain crops.
The decisions are being made on which commodity has the best pricing, really. So these fields that are being lost, they're just walking away from, not for the lack of orders, not because the product can't be sold, it's just because we don't have a waiver.
AFBF said the H-2A program has doubled over the past 10 years. Last year, the program certified a record number of workers, almost 140,000. And this year's second quarter numbers were up 13% from 2015. Director of Congressional Relations Christy Boswell told Brownfield farmers in over 25 states have reported H-2A visa application delays this season.
These are farmers who have crops ready to go and ready to harvest, are following all the rules and making sure they have legal workers, and yet the government is impeding their ability to get these workers on time and their crops out of the field.
While farmers struggled to find workers, labor rates saw increases throughout the year. In the spring, the USDA said the average farm worker earned $12.75 per hour during April, up 4% compared to the previous year. In the fall, the number of farm workers in the Great Lakes region continued to rise. In its farm labor report, the USDA said farms in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan during the week of October 9th hired 1,000 more farm workers than the July report. Farm operators also paid their workers higher salaries in the fall, averaging nearly $14.70 per hour. Meanwhile, the national average was 13 and a quarter per hour, 3% higher than 2015. Reporting for Brownfield, I'm Nicole Heslop.
On Brownfield's 2016 Year in Review, there was a corner turned this past year on the issue of whether it should be mandatory to label foods containing GMO ingredients. A law was to take effect on July 1st in the state of Vermont, mandating labeling in that state, which would be tantamount to a national standard for companies that distribute there. Kelly Johnston with Campbell Soup Company told Brownfield Ag News in March where the food manufacturer stood on the issue.
It's time to embrace mandatory GM labeling, but done right. And so we've decided to begin this journey to support mandatory on-pack labeling, but do it in a way that's not as onerous as Vermont's law is.
Johnston added further that Campbell's has a favorable view on the technology for the production of food.
We think GMOs are safe. We think they've been in the marketplace for 20 years. Every study we've seen shows they're safe. There was a terrific beta study done about 2 years ago based on some thousand studies that showed that GMOs have never harmed a single human or animal. So we think they're perfectly safe. Better yet, we see the benefits because there are environmental benefits to GMOs. There are benefits to farmers for GMOs. We've seen recorded less use of pesticides because of GMOs. And with a world that's growing to 9 billion people over the next 30 to 40 years, with less arable land around the world, we need GMOs as part of the solution to help feed a growing world.
Here's more on the GMO labeling issue from Brownfield's Nicole Heslop.
In February, a GMO labeling bill introduced by Senate Ag Committee Chair Pat Roberts was scheduled for committee markup. Roberts' bill would create a voluntary biotech food label and preempt state labeling laws, including the one in Vermont, set to take effect July 1st. It mandated that the USDA set standards for voluntary labeling of biotech foods. The Senate Agriculture Committee advanced Roberts' bill by the end of the month, but it failed to receive the 60 votes needed to advance legislation through the Senate. However, both sides indicated negotiations would continue, and another bill could come up for consideration by the following week. Regardless of congressional action, food companies continue to weigh in on the issue. General Mills became the second major food company to begin voluntarily labeling its products that contain GMO ingredients. Mars and Kellogg soon followed suit as Vermont's July 1st deadline loomed. Leaders of the Senate Ag Committee told farm broadcasters in April they were still working to find a compromise on GMO labeling. But committee ranking member Debbie Stabenow admitted it's one of the toughest issues she's had to deal with.
It is not sustainable to have 50 different states and 50 different rules.
By mid-year, food and agriculture groups were pleading with Congress to pass a national GMO labeling standard before Vermont's labeling law went into effect. In a conference call with reporters, American Soybean Association CEO Steve Senske said some companies may reformulate their products to remove GMO ingredients rather than create a separate label for just one state.
Some companies have already announced in advance of the July 1 date reformulation plans, but we're aware that there's a lot of other companies out there that have been waiting, have been holding back, you know, hope against hope that the Senate will act.
If Congress didn't act by July 1st, Senske said,
we do think that reformulation plans will be announced, and that's going to have very negative impacts.
Almost a week before Vermont's labeling law went into effect, a bipartisan agreement on a national GMO labeling standard was breached. And during the first week of July, on a vote of 63 to 30, the U.S. Senate passed the GMO labeling bill. The bill preempts state laws requiring the labeling of genetically modified foods and establishes a federal mandatory disclosure system. In floor debate leading up to the vote, Senate Agriculture Committee Chair Pat Roberts stressed that GMOs do not present a safety or health issue. Within days, the House had passed the Senate version of the bill, which the president signed into law, leaving the USDA 2 years to work out the regulatory details. A report in December from a consumer research firm found even though consumers were more aware of the benefits of genetically modified organisms, they still had concerns. Darren Seifer is a food and beverage industry analyst with the NPD Group.
For example, in 2013, among those who are primarily responsible for their household's grocery shopping, more than half said they had little to no awareness of GMOs. Flash forward to now, and that number has shrunk to less than 40%.
He told Brownfield the recent study shows consumers who are aware of GMOs do recognize the benefits to crop production, but still worry about food safety.
The concerns tend to center around, quote, messing with living organisms, tinkering with the foods that they consume all the time. Whether or not these are true and that's actually happening during the process of creating a GMO crop is one story, but those tend to be the top concerns that consumers have.
Cipher said only 11% of respondents are aware of the federal GMO labeling law passed earlier in the year. The NPD group held an online panel in October and November, and more than 2,000 primary household grocery shoppers completed the survey. With Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Nicole Heslop.
The softening of the agriculture economy has an immediate debilitating effect on those businesses that serve farmers. Less farm income results in fewer sales of inputs or equipment that aren't considered essential. This is particularly true in the farm equipment business, which has been battered by fewer sales ever since farm income began to fade. Brownfield's Mark Dorenkamp reports there is data from the Agriculture Equipment Manufacturers, the AEM, that this may be changing.
AEM says sales of all tractors in the U.S. were 8% higher than the same month last year. For the 11 months of 2016, more than 194,000 tractors were sold, compared to just over 189,000 in 2015, a 3% increase. Sales of tractors under 40 horsepower are up 12% over year-ago levels, but sales of two- and four-wheel drive tractors of 100 or more horsepower are off 23%. And combine sales plummeted again this year with a 26% decrease compared to 2015. U.S. farm equipment exports have also struggled for much of 2016. AEM Senior Vice President Charlie O'Brien told Brownfield earlier this month, total exports are down 14%, with a 15% decline for the largest regional customer, Canada. He says manufacturers are approaching next year cautiously.
There's a hope that we're getting closer to the bottom, and expectations are that, you know, certain regions of the world, Latin America being one, that there may be some expectations of some increases overall from an export in those regions. But I think that 2017 we're still cautious about.
O'Brien says continued low commodity prices and a strong U.S. dollar are the primary reasons for the overall decrease in farm equipment exports. For the 2016 Year in Review, I'm Mark Dorenkamp, Brownfield.
Coming up, we'll listen to accounts from farmers across the Corn Belt about the growing season and ultimately about the harvest. At least one Minnesota grower had a good harvest in spite of having to plant four times. We'll be right back on the 2016 Brownfield Year in Review.